We felt that the conference is about Masorah, and not only about Masorah of animals and birds. Masorah plays a crucial role in other aspects of halacha as well. And one of those areas, which is very, very relevant for next year, which is the Shemitah year, is the Gvulos of Eretz Yisrael. We're very fortunate to have today Dr. Shalom Kelman, who came in from Baltimore, who has spent the last several, I don't know how many months, researching this topic in depth. He has prepared for us a six-hour lecture on the Gvulos of Eretz Yisrael, covering all aspects, and we've convinced him to give us just the Rashi Prakim in half an hour. So, Shalom.
Thank you for hanging in there. This is an unbelievable conference. I wish you all give a big hand to the that we've had till now. It's just been unreal. And the truth is, I really have this. As Ari said, the only real connection that he knows about is that it's a Masorah issue. And I'm sorry I missed your opening remarks, but that's the whole key that infuses this conference and the conferences we've had similar to this is the concept of Masorah. I want to thank Ari. I happen to have a special interest in Gvulos HaAretz from another perspective, and Ari invited me to do this a couple of months ago. I thought it'd be not too difficult, and I found myself now I am involved in my whole being into these topics, and that's what, seriously, I was told there's no way I can possibly give you even a little bit in a cohesive fashion the things that are a very complex area. So I call it the highlights of my Gvulos HaAretz talk, and in Mitzvah Shem, we'll see how it goes. Let me get started with our first slide.
Close the lights in the back, please. Thank you.
Now, actually, there was another connection. We're in the Denver Zoo, and I had these pictures of our giraffes. I saw the giraffes were prominently displayed, but we couldn't get the giraffe either to convince them. And in case you're interested for the future, the largest collection of giraffes in the zoo population in the country is in the Colorado Springs Zoo in Colorado. Okay. All right, so this is the roadmap for what we're going to do now. We're going to run ahead the fascinating story of the cast of characters. Who were the Chokrim? Who were the investigators to help to restore this Masorah? I mean, what we've been talking about in some areas of halacha is a continuous Masorah. In other areas of halacha, sometimes the Masorah is lost temporarily and reinvigorated, as Rav Schechter spoke about in the last Masorah conference with regard to Techeles, and with regard to other areas of halacha. Sometimes they're momentarily lost or not completely lost, and we have to kind of reinvestigate. So there's an incredible story about who these investigators are. And then we'll talk about some of the important concepts as relate to Shemitah and relate to Gvulos HaAretz. And then I'm going to have a whole discussion on maps and borders. And then if we have any time, we'll talk about contemporary controversies. So here are some of the names you should be all familiar with. The first and foremost is probably the Kaftor Beferach. His name was Rav Ishtori HaParchi. And I discovered this recently with one of my research. He comes from, we mentioned the city today, Florence. And that's why the Florence is a flower. His name was HaParchi, the flower. He's interesting in his introduction to his Sefer. His name is Ishtori. It's a very unusual name. He made a pun in the name. He says this is Ishtori. A man of Torah. He was a Talmud of the Rush. He had to flee from Europe. He came to Israel. He's traveled the land for 7 years, took very detailed investigations, and he put together a work which is the Rishon, and it's an incredible work. It helps us. It's a foundation for everything we know about the Gvulos HaAretz. Now we have to jump ahead to the 1800s to an amazing man, Rabbi Yosef Schwartz. He spent also many, many years in Eretz Yisrael, traveling among the Arabs, the Bedouins. He was everywhere. And this is the point in history, by the way, where the cartography, the science of map making, really starts to come to its own. And he was knowledgeable in so many areas. The man was an absolute genius. And it's even more amazing that his work was published in Hebrew, and then in English, and in German. And it was published, again, in the 1840s, and then a little later editions in 1900s. He was, again, I wish I had the time to describe all the amazing things he did.
Just a few years ago, it was republished.
Oh, yeah. You can get it online now. You go online, you get the Hebrew and English edition. I'm quoting from it later on, from the online edition, with all the pictures. He had many, many woodcuts that he used, engravings, and they were upgraded over the years. Then the next very big name in the field is the Admas Kodesh. And he was a Rav in Israel, Rav Yitzchak Goldhar. In 1913 it was published. He takes issues with many of the conclusions of the Gvulos HaAretz, but understand, these were great Talmidei Chachamim. These were not scholar. These were not academics. These were men who were completely infused with the Torah spirit, and they were trying to regain our Masorah about where the Gevulos, the borders of Israel, were. And then finally, the Mishnah Yosef is contemporary. As our Rabbi Bashur says, he's the real Joe Lieberman, Rabbi Yosef Lieberman, and he is the one who, I will make my references to his work a little bit later. So here's a picture in the English edition of, in the style of Ari, and Ari always have the pictures and the history. I've been influenced by your presentations over the last two visits, so I hope I get a little bit of that favor in this talk as well. And you can see the Admas Kodesh. I had to cut a lot of other beautiful pictures I have because of time constraints. These were full-color maps when they were published. And these are just digitized images. Now, Mishnas Yosef is an encyclopedic work where he covers Hilchos Shviyas and Mishnayos Shviyas and Shemitah. He is an interesting, very interesting individual. He was a trained architect. He still practices. He's in his 80s. And he has extensive geographic discussions, particularly with regard to the sixth parak of Shviyas, which talks about the Gevulos Haaretz. And his comprehensive maps are used by everybody in the field. So even Chaim Kanievsky refers to him many places in his work on the Rambam. So this is why you'll see his map. This is the key map that I use many times. It covers, you have the coding here, the different areas of Israel, and we'll come to that right now. And they're very detailed in terms of the names of the places. So I can imagine many great scholars have been sitting, poring over his maps for the last, this was first published in the early 60s, and every Shemitah he comes out with another edition with some variations. In addition, he also has the Mishnas Yosef's Shalos and Shuvas, where he goes in greater detail. So he really formulates this. So these are the main characters for our talk. Now, Jen, just to connect it to our today's talk, the Masorah idea, the idea of how... I'm sorry, Ari.
Can you just do one quick explanation why this is crucial? Why we need to know the borders of Shemitah?
Well, obviously, I will get into that. But I'll say it right now. Because the idea of Shemitah is a din of mitzvot hatulios ba'aretz, and therefore it requires to know what the Eretz Yisrael is for the mitzvah of keeping those mitzvahs. We'll talk in more detail, but that's why, in order to keep Shemitah, you have to, if you want to keep Shemitah properly, you have to know what the borders of the land, what constitutes Eretz Yisrael. So, in there, such that if you want to say grow during the Shemitah year, you can grow outside of Eretz Yisrael. So you have to know what's inside and what's outside, and thereby permit people to grow as farms and so on in Eretz Yisrael, the region of Eretz Yisrael. Mentioning the Chazon Ish, I'll come to this point again. The Chazon Ish was mentioned with kind of his personality, his work against the reform and so on. He was the farmer's friend. That's like an old Oklahoma story. He was a farmer's friend. In other words, he believed in Jewish farmers. He bent over backwards to make all many things in the Chazon Ish's approach to how to grow, even during the Shemitah period. I was told by an expert in the field that when they presented to Rav Yoshev some of the coolest of the Chazon Ish on how to grow things during the Shemitah year, he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. But at the same time, the Chazon Ish was very against the Hetzem Mechiva. So, but he balanced it. He was against the Hetzem Mechiva, but he wanted to have a way of being able to grow properly and do a Hapi Halacha. Okay, so now, here's a very important concept that I think it runs through the whole principle of the Masorah in this conference. The Kafta Foferach made many of his identifications of locations based on Arabic names, similarities to Arabic names. And he felt it was a reliable approach. In contrast to the Chazon Ish, he says you cannot base any halachic decisions just on similar names. He says, for example, the locations could have changed. The names may sound to you one way, but sound to somebody else another way. And sometimes you have the same name for different locations. So he was very against, and this approach has been carried through Rav Yoshev, and again, I mentioned the Derech Hamuna, Chanan Kanievsky, Sefer on the Rambam Hilchos Trumos, which I spent a lot of time with, and he repeats this concept very often. So you'll find again that the Mishnas Yosef, Rav Yosef Lieberman, he, in his tshuvas, brings from the Kafta Beferach, that he felt, in contrast to Chazon Ish, he felt this was an approach that you can be relied upon. So it's a basic conceptual difference on how to approach this question. Now we get to the land of Israel. What is the land of Israel? So when we're talking about, and this to me was a big insight, making aliyah to the land of Israel, or burial in Eretz Israel, or other things which not directly relate to Mitzvot Tulias Ba'aretz, there's a different classification of what we call Israel. As opposed to the Mitzvot Tulias Ba'aretz, for example, Trumos, Maisros, Shemitah, it's a different classification, it's a different concept. Now what do I mean by this? There's a concept of the land of the Avos. Avram was planned the land of the seven nations, Zion Amamim, As you can see, the pasuk Kumas Aleich Baris Laka Rachba Kelachat Nana. This is the Eretz Avot. This is the land of the our forefathers. The Shechina. This point is made by many of the Chokrim, the Kaftav Aferach, Chasam Sofer has a whole tshuva that all this. All my resources, by the way, almost all come directly from the Mishnah Yosef. Made a very important point that the Shechina is present from the days of Avraham Avinu. It never left Eretz Israel, according to this approach. The Kedusha is everlasting and uninterrupted when we're talking about the Kedusha, the inherent Kedusha of Eretz Israel. Not regard the Kedusha we're going to talk about of mitzvot atulios baretz, but the special quality of Eretz Israel per se. That's never lost. And in fact, Yemos HaMashiach, this additional expansion of this Kedusha will be expanded to the three other nations, and as you see in the bottom there, and it's going to expand from Nahar Mitzrayim by Nahar HaGol Nahar Pras. Now, if you look at a satellite map, this is at the end of the talk, I've been saving a special treat. How many people here have been used Google Earth? Anyone raise your hand who's used Google Earth? How many people, those who've raised their hand, know that Google Earth is a terrain three-dimensional map that you can tilt? So there are people who know that, but it was a surprise to me, and I think we're going to be excited to see the new kind of research you can be done in your own house knowing this knowledge. So now, based on this is, anyone know what river that is? That's Nahar Pras. That's a giant river. This is I don't know how many miles, 50 miles, 70 miles off from space. And here is Yam HaAcharon, either the Mediterranean or perhaps the Yam Suf. Why is it called Yam Suf? One approach, Yam Sof. Yam HaAcharon, the end. So this is the expanse from here to here is the land, to here perhaps, of the land promised of us in the future, in the Mishnah Mashiach. But we're going to talk now, it's about Parshas Maaseh. In Parshas Maaseh, this is where the land of Mitzvos HaTluyos Baris starts to begin. It's the land of the 9.5 Shvatim. It's the beginning of the period of Mitzvos HaTluyos Baris. It's now the end. Now this land that the parsha we just read in Parshas Maaseh was a question in the Rishonim Achronim. Was it fully conquered by the Olei Mitzrayim or not? And the answer is no, it wasn't. In fact, the pasuk says you shouldn't conquer it all at once because Shemit Herber Yalach HaChayas HaSodeh. But eventually, over time, it did become fully populated. And the approach is, especially in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, it was considered to be fully populated. Now, here's the Parsha, and here shows you the main things that we do know today. With knowing, there's no question of Masorah, for example, is where is... I can't read the lamp. I can't read it here. Oop. I'm sorry. Nobody questions where the Yam HaMelech is. And even the Chazon Ish would say, no, that's something you can depend on. Yam HaMelech, we all know, is over here. For example, the Nachal Mitzrayim, that is debatable. Nachal Mitzrayim, is it Al Harish, according to Rav Sajid Gaon and many other followers of Rav Sajid Gaon, or according to most Rishonim, like Rashi and those who follow, it's the Nile. It's this called the pollution Nile, this portion of the Nile. But that's a question. But at least that's not as debatable. The Gvul Yam, everyone agrees, this is the Gvul Yam, this is the Mediterranean. Hor ha hor, I'm going to say that towards the end of the discussion. A fascinating discussion. What is Hor HaHor? What does that mountain refer to? And then
there's several names, Hor HaHor.
That's right.
Even Aaron was buried in one, but there was another
right,
one.
Right, you anticipate, exactly, we'll say it right now. Rashi makes the point that the Hor HaHor mentioned in this parasha is not to be mistaken with the Hor HaHor that is identified with the burial place of Aaron, which was down here in the southeast. Hor HaHor is up here in the northwest. So it's a separate Hor HaHor. Again, illustrating the main thrust of the IKEA, this guy there, Meshach HaZon Ish. You have the same name for completely vastly different places. And then we have here the Yam HaKineres. Not too many people would argue we know what the Kineres is. And then, can we read that? What's that? Gvul HaYardena. Most people will agree that's the Yardena. There's not any questions about that. It's the words in between that's the question. And what are those places and what are their names? And that's where we'll try to get into some of that. I said I want to give you highlights. Now, what I've outlined here is one approach. The states say the Admas Kodesh. It's more of the constrained approach, what is considered the end of the 9.5, although 9.5. So the Hor HaHor he identifies in this region here. This is the Chatzah, this is the way the border travels. And by the way, for those of you who like to use the English art scroll, Chumash, they have this map without any attribution, unfortunately, at the Mishnas Yosef, and they just simplified this map. This is the map you're looking at that they use. And this would show, this is Nachal Mitzrayim, this would be the Yam HaMelech, this is the southern border, according to his approach. The northern border is over here somewhere, and we'll get into this in greater detail. But this will give you a rough idea. This is the land of the 9.5 Shvatim. Of course, Reuven and Gad were over here. You have the Bashan, you have the Tarchon, you have other areas which were conquered but they were conquered before the about the 2.5 Shvatim before they entered Eretz Yisrael. Now this is the equivalent of the same region showing on a satellite map, and these are some areas we're going to discuss a little bit later, and we get a little more detail. But this is how it would look on a satellite map. Yes. This is the land of the Olei Mitzrayim. This is the land of promise and the Nesiim. And there's a very unusual order, the listing of the Nesiim here. It starts with Yehuda, then Shimon, Binyamin, Dan, Menashe, Ephraim, Zebulun, Yisachar, Asher, and Naphtali. It's a unique order. And none of them are forced, and they struggle to figure out what it is. And the answer, why they had a hard time, was they didn't have maps. They didn't have maps. It was a relatively new idea. But if you look at these names, you'll notice it's a geographic order. It's Yehuda, Binyamin, Dan, Ephraim, Menashe, Yisachar, Zebulun, Aftar, and it's from south to north. The only other source I could found to even hint, it was of Yaakov Kamenetsky, MS Yaakov, and exactly what I've learned it five times, I don't understand what he's saying, but he still has a geographic, he sees a geographic point. Who the Shema is all one, just because they're not really divided. It's rough, and it's there are other parashios, what I wanted to make the point was, it's geographic order, we'll move on, and I'll have to talk about it more with you later. All right. Now we have this concepts of a Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia. Let's just do that quickly. You have the idea that Olei Mitzrayim, by the fact that they conquered, conquest is what conveyed the Kedusha. The Rambam makes a big deal about this, and Rishonim talk about it, but this is the basic concept I want to share with you. The difference between the Olei Mitzrayim and the Olei Bavel. The Olei Mitzrayim, the conquest. The Gemara has a machlokes. Did that Kedusha lapse or not? The following opinion, most of our passages like this, that it lapsed. The Kedusha Rishona, Kedusha Lashata Velo Kitchalas Lovo. So that Kedusha, which invested the land with the Kedusha with regard to Eretz, the mitzvah, Satulios Ba'aretz, Trumas, Maisets, and so on, that lapsed and was gone after the Chorban Bayis Rishon. When they returned under the leadership of Ezra, they were authorized to take the land back by the king, the Persian monarch, who was the son of Esther. And that Kedusha of Ezra, according to, again, this is every line here is probably, every single line is a machlokas. The Yerushalmi has a machlokas. There's a Daraisa, the Rabbanan. The general opinion, it was a Daraisa. The Rambam sees it was a Daraisa. The question, the machlokas, the Gemara, we have many places, is the Kedusha Shnia, was that lapsed? Is that Kedusha of the Shnia, us love or not? The Rambam follows the opinion, Ezra's Kedusha was a permanent Kedusha, and therefore it's in effect for all the areas possessed by the Olei Bavel. So it was Kedusha Shnia Asalavo. But even so, you see, not necessarily, it doesn't make the halachas in Eretz Yisrael all Daraisa. It could be Darabana for other reasons we'll get into. What is an impractical nafkamina of the Rambam's approach? The Chazon Ish makes this point that if during the Mos HaMashiach, most of Eretz Yisrael is now inhabited by Rov Yisrael, there will be no further sanctification needed. You won't have to have a new Kedusha. That Kedusha of Ezra remains forever and ever, and it would be no special new Kedusha be needed. Now, it's interesting, if you compare the regions of what was Olei Mitzrayim, Olei Bavel, you find Olei Bavel's region was contracted in the north, where the southern borders are very similar. Now, why? And now I'm going to summarize, I'm going to simplify, and there's a trade-off. Whenever you simplify, you always sacrifice accuracy. So I'm going to say things which are not 100% true, but just for the purpose of this talk, just to make a story for you that makes some sense. So what's the reason? Main reason was Ezra had left behind many cities and regions without Kedusha in order they can provide for the poor during the Shemitah year. Now, there's what Chagiga and many other places. In other words, during the Shemitah year, there's no Trumas and Maestros, there's no Maestro Ani. What you have is it's a free-for-all. But that's not enough to supply the poor with their needs. So they therefore left behind areas which they instituted there'll be Meiser Ani during that seventh year. They allowed people to work those fields and the produce would go to the Aniyim. Very simple. This is machlokas, every line I said, like I said, but this is a simplified approach. It not only applied to the border cities, the outside borders of Eretz Yisrael, but it also applied to inner areas. For example, Beit Shan, Rebbe Hitra Beit Shan. He hit a Guv, he was Matir a lot of places and said, this is not having, this is the Nechus L'Aretz. So therefore, you can do all you think you have to do, but you have to leave behind the matanos, the aniyim, so they can have a livelihood during this period. Now, looking at our Mishnas Yosef map, it comes out that the Olei Mitzrayim region was outlined here, as I pointed here, includes the region we had before, plus those regions on the Eber HaYarden, and we go all the way out the Tarchon region, these areas, all the far out that were covered by the Bashan region, that was all Mechasi Shevet Menashe out there. The difference between Olei Moav and Olei Mitzrayim, I said in the south, is a similar. But this is, again, this is one approach, again, from the Admos Kodesh. This region was conquered by Olei Mitzrayim and was not conquered by Olei Bavel. So this is the region that is, the Olei Bavel region kind of comes right up to where it says Kziv here, Achziv, and there's the famous Ritzua that maybe we learned about in Gittin, the famous Ritzua between Achziv and Akko and Achziv, and this is illustrated here. This would be... Now, this is, Lebanon would be right over here. This is Suma de Tzur. That's Rosh HaNikra. This would be according to one opinion. I'm going to go with that right now, real quickly. Now, let's get to the laws of Shemitah. Got to throw them in a little bit. What does it mean? Again, a cessation of most agricultural activity in the seventh year. For the Olei Mitzrayim, it was certainly a halacha d'oraisa. But for Olei Bavel, it was a force of a Shemitah that was only rabbinic. Now, the whole machlokis, during the days of Ezra, was it rabbinic? Or was it with Daraisa during the days of Bayis Sheni and only became rabbinic following the Korban of Bayis Sheni? Now, why? Because Daraisa requires that you have to have Rov Yoshev Aleha. You have to have most of Bnei Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael for it to be a Din Daraisa. If during the period of the Second Temple, only a minority of the Jews lived in Israel at that time. So therefore, these halachas of Mitzvos HaTluyos Baretz, a Din Darabanan, only applies to the Trumas, Maisros, and Shvias. It is interesting, we mentioned this earlier, that Kelayim and Bikurim, even during this period, now as a Dindo Araisa, again in the land of called Eretz Israel. What's the big nafke mean? What's going to be the difference? If it's a Dindo Rabbanon, the Dindo Rabbanon, rabbinic laws are more strict in the Olei Bavel region than they are in the Olei Mitzrayim region. So many of the efforts of this Chokrim are trying to decide where is Olei Bavel and where is Olei Mitzrayim. Where are those different regions? Because that's going to make a nafke mina. Now, what's more nafkamina? What's different? So, again, very complicated, but I'll give you one approach. The difference between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi and Tosfos hold that Shemitah only applies to the regions Olei Bavel, and not the regions Olei Mitzrayim. So there will be no din of Shemitah in those regions, for the reason we just said. So when they did it purposely, Ezra left those areas not Kedusha, in order so those regions would have a din of Chutz La'aretz. They can therefore grow at regular growth on the seventh year, and thereby be able to provide for the poor during that period of time. But everybody agrees, according to Tosfos, that Trumas and Maisros apply in both the Halacha Rabbanon, they apply to both Olei Bavel and Olei Mitzrayim. It was only a Nafka Min. The only difference would be the Hilchos Shemitah. Now, let's go through a couple of sources, in the Talmudic sources, that describe these regions. One of the famous sources is the Mishnah in Gittin. Rabbi Yehuda says, the Mishnah is discussing when someone brings a get, the law that he has to make a pronouncement, the Edom have to bring a pronouncement. If they're bringing it from outside of Eretz Israel, they have to say, Bafonai Nachta, Bafonai Nachtam. It was signed in front of me, it was testified that we're there, and that the get was done al pi halacha. Now, where do they have to do this? Only when they're outside of Eretz Israel. So what are the parameters? What is outside Eretz Israel? So Rabbi Yehuda says, from the place called Rechem, to the Mizrach, the Rechem and Mizrach. Anything to the east of Rechem is called outside the eastern part of Eretz Israel. May Ashkelon l'Doron, v'Ashkelon k'Doron. Anything south of the city of Ashkelon, and Ashkelon, as Rambam says, is also considered outside Eretz Israel. And may Akko l'Tzofon, Akko k'Tzofon. Akko is the northernmost region. Now this, according to most Rishonim, this Mishnah is describing the borders of Olei Bavel, of course, the Rambam, Olei Mitzrayim. This is grist in the mill for the Achronim and the Rambam to go crazy. 2 minutes. Are you kidding? What? All right, so what you see here on the map of the Mishnah of Yosef, you have Ashkelon in the south, you have Akko in the north. And there, is, as Rav Achronim explained, the idea of a ribua, the main square of Olei Bavel. It covered a region from here out to here, and this was the Olei Bavel region. What about below? We said south, we said below. It's also, we'll talk about below in a second. We'll get to Rechem in a minute. So now, this is the thing I think you should all be, this is a major discovery for me. It's out there since 1970s. But there was a brisa called Tachumen. There's a brisa that's brought in Yerushalmi Shvius and Sifri at the end of Ekev and the Tosefta. And now this new source, the Beit Shan Mosaic. What it is a list of 30 locations which were used to outline the borders of the Olei Bavel. The Encyclopedia Talmudit collates and compares every one of these versions with pages and pages, incredible scholarship, and they compare They give the list, they map them, and they give passable identifications with actual latitude and longitude coordinates. So you can really go in there and decide what's the most likely location. But of all the sources, the most fascinating is the Beit Shan Mosaic. How many people know about this Beit Shan Mosaic? I wasn't even famous here. Okay. So it was discovered in 74. It's a synagogue floor, 1,300 years old. It was a biblical place called Rehov. That's called in the Tanakh. Today it's called Ein HaNetziv. It's a list of the summary of the laws of Shvius, Terumas, Maisus, as they are relevant to the Beit Shan Valley. And they have there, word for word, the Brisa of Tchumen. Now, what's so amazing about this is the fact that the wording in the sequence is very close to the Sifrei's approach, but the spellings are closer to the Yerushalmi. It's the oldest example of Torah Sheba'al Peh that has been committed to writing. This in itself, in terms of the Masorah Conference, this is like the oldest Masorah of the Torah Sheba'al Peh that's ever written down. And what makes it so important is because it's free of all copyists and printing errors. It's the original. It's as close to the original as you can get. And that's why scholars have really depended much on his example picture of it. The YU Museum had it on display about 2 years ago, and had the whole display on the Gemara, on the Talmud, and they had a beautiful display. They actually I was actually taken out of Eretz Yisrael for display. Now, it's interesting, in the comment of Tavuas Oretz, this is from Rav Schwartz. He says, however uninteresting this passage may appear, it still is important to study it because you'll learn so much from it. He says, I can explain it with accuracy based on tracing the names that he did his research. That's what's so exciting about it. Here's how the whole passage, and this a part that's highlighted, is the part that relates to this Gulas Oretz. And I'd just like to focus, you'll notice the beginning says, these are Tachumi Eretz Yisrael, V'Ovoi Bavel, Parshas Ashkelon, the Parshas of the Ashkelon region, followed by Chomas Akko, is one of the other locations, outside walls of Akko, and this unusual place, Rekim Tarchon Zmira, the Mitcham Le Notzra. Why are these so fascinating? And in fact, again, to Ashkelon. So in other words, it starts with the description from Ashkelon and works its way all around the borders of Eretz Israel and ends up at Ashkelon again. So those are the three places we talked about. One of the beautiful pshatim I've heard from, I'm blocking his name right now, or Blandes, that these areas are, why are they chosen? They weren't meant to be, the Mishnah wasn't meant to describe the detail that we have in this Brisa. It was meant simply to say, these are along the main roads that led from outside Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, to the Ole Bavel territory. So in other words, it's like when you get on the freeway in Los Angeles, do you know when you get on one entrance and you get off another exit? Do you know if you're going north, south, east, or west? You have no concept. You just get on, and that's the same thing. They knew these were the roads that would take them into Eretz Yisrael. If you were beyond these cities where the Jewish population was sparse, the presumption was they didn't know enough Torah to be able to do a get properly. But if you were within these cities, they were properly executed. So that's what the idea of these three cities have been chosen. You have to know a little bit about the history of Ole Bavel to appreciate the name, why these cities are so unusual. During the period of the 440 years from Ezra until the destruction of the second Tobias, the original part of it, Ezra only controlled small regions from Yerushalayim to Beersheba. It was during that period that no coastal plain were occupied by Jews. It didn't take place until the Hashmonaic period, much later. The greatest expansion took place during the days of Herod, which is 100 years before the Churban. And at that point, he controlled almost the map that we saw before, the northern Golan, the Bashan, the Trachon region. But the Jews never controlled Ashkelon or Akko. This is the historical basis for the Rambam Shita, as he understood the Gemara, that these were always considered Chutz La'aretz. And that's why they're mentioned in the Brisa. They're outside. What about this third place you had mentioned, Rekem? What's that? That's what's got to do with anything? This Rekem Trachon Zimra Mitchum Batra. There is a city in the Trachon region on the road from Bavel that Josephus points out that Herod and invited a man named Zimri, that's the Zimra, the Zimri, to develop a fortress in this region, which he called Bathriwa or Batsra, a very similar name, to protect travelers from Bavel. So it was a major fortress that was used to discourage bandits from the Trachon to attack the Jews who were coming from Bavel. So now, what ties all these things together is that these three main cities, which are brought in the Mishnah, and now we saw them on the in the Brisa, were chosen because they outlined the regions of access into the Ole Bavel region. And that's why they were chosen. So here's a map from the Encyclopedia Talmudit, where they outline all the different locations. It's very similar to very similar outline that we had to the one we showed earlier. And this to show you the detail they have. They go and number each one of these locations or the maps and where they can be found. And this, now, those of us who are now living in the art scroll age, I had the great fortune to have to be able to have this came out just a few months ago, Maseches Shviyos on the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi, they put this map together, their own version of the map of what the Olei Bavel region is. So again, why is this important to Olei Bavel? Because that will tell us what was had the Kedusha Shniyah that have a place to have the halachas of Shemitah. Now, the other Mishnah that's very important to be aware of is the Mishnah at the beginning of the sixth parak, and I'll just to briefly show you, it says Shalosh Arasos L'Shviyas. There are three locations for Shviyas. There's a place called the Olei Bavel region, which goes up to a place called Kiziv. There's a place of Olei Mitzrayim, which goes from Kiziv ad Hanahar. And there's another, and from Hanahar and to Amana, this location, Kiziv, Hanahar, and Amana. And then there's a third place, which is outside this land completely. So the Mishnah is stating that there's a difference between the borders of Bavel and Olei Mitzrayim. Olei Bavel comes up to a place called Kiziv. Olei Mitzrayim goes up to Amana and the river. And then describes, I left out the part, different halachas that apply to these locations. So what are these locations referring to? So there's been a lot of, this is again, major halachas in the Rishonim, how to understand it. The simple way, well, like the Rambam, the Gra, the Katav HaFerach, that these two cities lie on the coast. The city of Kiziv lies between Amana, which is Hor HaHor, and that's in the north, and the river, the Nachal Mitzrayim, lies in the south. So the width of land, inland from the coast, which remember, was never the coast was eventually captured by Olei Bavel, but Olei Mitzrayim captured it, but the Olei Bavel did not capture two of these cities. This width of land, they left free of Kedushas Olei Bavel. The width of land inland from the coast, which was the same width as the city of Kziv, was captured by Olei Mitzrayim, but not by Olei Bavel. And this is what it would look like. This is the land of we talked about, this region going north to the strip over here, and the strip down here to Nachal Mitzrayim. This region had no Kedusha of Olei Bavel, only had the old Kedusha of Olei Mitzrayim. These are the major Talmudical sources that you have to be familiar with if you want to get a grasp what some of the issues are in this halacha. So let's now just go to the northern boundary. Give me a cutoff. No, I will. I only started half an hour late. All right. Let me just go show you some of the lands of the northern boundary. This is one of the major issues that I think that they talk about. This northern boundary is Hor HaHor. It is described, I said, Hor Maaseh. It's described by Rashi as a mountain atop a mountain, but also by the Rashi Surya, a parish on the Yerushalmi, as a woman who's pregnant, a pregnant mountain, a Hora, like an Isha Hora, a pregnant woman. Now, I'm just going to run through this very quickly. It's going to go up the map. The Rashi is the Shalmud Tzur. This is the region, Shalmud Tzur is Rosh HaNikra region. The other one, the Maharit, based on a Masorah, very important Masorah. He says, the Jews of Israel knew that the northernmost part of Eretz Yisrael was this Kasamaya River. It's known as here the Latini, and this portion was Kasmaya. According to the Admas Kodesh, it was up near the Beirut region, the mountains in the Beirut region. According to the Tefuas Haaretz, it went up to a place, another place a little further north near Tripoli. And that's, by the way, the Tefuas Haaretz in the English is how his English edition map how he identified it. And then the Rambam, which is a very important sheet to recognize. He says it's the mountain of the Banyas, which is at about the 35th parallel, 35th latitude. The Rambam, the Kiddush HaChodesh, says that the extent of Eretz Yisrael comes from the 30th below to the 35th latitude above. How did the Rambam know about latitudes? Isn't that something recent? It's as old as Ptolemy. I was shocked to find that myself. That's how long they've known about latitudes. And that was something, that's the Rambam Shita. And the Kaftav HaFerach says it was way up in a place called, this place called Jabal Akra. Now, this is a picture of Jabal Akra, and you can see, I think it has a nice demonstration of this mounded, pregnant-looking of a mountain. I'm going to skip the others, because I wanted to show you the major disputes now is in the Arava. The south, what is considered the southeast corner? According to the Chumash, it starts from the southeast corner of Yam HaMelech and works its way south. There's a dispute of how far south extends. The Badatz says it extends based on the work of the Admas Kodesh and the Gulas Haaretz that are written by Shlomo Yosef to upset that it is not as far south as Ein Yahav. Ein Yahav is outside that border. Ein Yahav is a moshav, it's a very agricultural work. Rabbi El Yoshev, based on the Rambam I mentioned, says no, it goes down to the 30th parallel, much further south. What's the nafkamina between this machlokes? Where do you grow vegetable farms in this region? If you want to evict the Rochazon Ish, if you want to be friendly to the farmer, and you want to have Jewish farmers supplying food during the period of the Shemitah, where can they grow the food? Where can they grow their produce? And this is, for example, his Ein Yahav. This is the border according to Admas Kodesh and according to Mishnas Yosef. And here you have Yahav, its right side. Now, you only get so much from these maps. You can get all this from a lot of maps. There's a whole Sefer written, Mishra HaRavah, trying to demonstrate the maps. But there's only so much you can do from a map of this kind. Avchaim Kanievsky, I'm just going to show you, he has a whole map. It's in your book. He tries to describe the borders of Eretz Yisrael. I need 5 more minutes. That's it. Of Eretz Yisrael, based on a Gemara in Baba Basra, saying that there are seven rivers and 4 bodies of water which surround Eretz Yisrael. Now I'd like to just switch to the computer and let me show you Google Earth representation of this of these areas. Let me sit over here. Okay, let me sit here. I'll just give me 5 more minutes, folks. I think you'll enjoy this. I hope you will. Okay, this is. I was hoping at the end of this we would know. This is the land we talked about. This is the biblical land of Israel. And those are the areas we just talked about. Let me give you a tour of the northern parts of Israel that we talked about. What's considered the north, the Machlokas. So we said one of the lower parts is Silma de Tzur. This is a three-dimensional map. This is what today is called Rosh HaNikra. According to this opinion of the Rosh, this area over here is considered the mountains, the grottos, the Rosh HaNikra, are considered what we call Hor HaHor. According to the opinion of the Maharit, this is where you can see the power of Google Earth. You get three-dimensional information you'll see in a second. So you see there's a river right over there, and that was famous during the war, the incursions to Lebanon. This is the Latini River. The Latini River is his pshat. I'm going to skip. What would be Hor HaHor according to the pshat of Maharit? According to him, it would be a mountain more inland, which you know today as Hor HaHor, as Mount Hermon. And that's the Hermon area. And you can go in close up. And that's your Mount Hermon region. That would be Hor HaHor according to the Maharit. According to the next, going a little further north, according to the Admas Kodesh, you're going now further north on the coast, and you're going to see, this is the Beirut, this is Beirut. This is Beirut, it's a very heavily populated region on the coast. But again, his mountain is real, so here somewhere, not exactly sure which mountain he's making reference to. Again, we're going to get closer to the truth here. It's all part. This is not. Yeah, this would be part of Israel according to the Pesukim in Maaseh. Now there's the Rambam's pshat. It's near a city called Banyas. It's not again clear which mountain the Rambam is referring to among these mountains. But this is the 35th parallel according to the Rambam. That would fit his pshat. And now I think we're getting closest to the best. This is the Jabal Akra of the Naft. The Kafna Baferach writes how he was for years looking for this source, and he was excited the day he found it. It's a half a day walk beyond the ancient city Latakia. Here it is again. I showed it to you in the earlier pictures, but you get a much different perspective when you can just look at it from different perspectives. Look,
let's
you see?
Let's see Eretz Yisrael down.
Now we're looking from down. Now Eretz Yisrael from this point. Now we're facing south as the compass points out. We can pull out a little bit in terms of our depth. It's because look, it's one way, but looking at the Google Map, by putting the cursor over there, it tells you the elevation.
No, how do we know
that the place of the mountain? Oh, because Rashi, the first one explained that it's a mountain. And that's why, according to the Rashi Solio's approach, Ahara Hara, that's why Isha Hara. My point I'm trying to make is that with this ability to see three-dimensional visualization, you can have new understandings of what's going on. Let me just finish with the southern border. It just take another 2 minutes of your time. According to the Chaim Kanievsky, we're going to fly down now south. We're passing. Now this is back. We're facing north again. And we're now going to look at a more expanded view. So this is the Yam HaMelech, this region. And if you zoom in on that, you'll see, as we go close, there is a border. The Jordan starts from up here. It's driving into the Yam HaMelech. What happened the last few years, the Movil HaAretz, diverted the waters of the Yarden past the Yam HaMelech, which is why the Yam HaMelech is actually shrinking. And they now are feeding the water to these locations such as Ein Yahav. So this is Ein Yahav. That little line there is demonstrating the border according to the Rav Chaim Kanievsky. It's Nachal Tzin. Now you see what's happening there. You have this incredible vegetation in this region. The amount of vegetation all along, this is called the Arava, and all along the Arava you can find incredible amounts of fields, of fertile fields, all just going up and down the Arava. It's just an amazing sight. And you can find them all the way up and down. The last point I'd like to show you is El Arish. El Arish is the location of Nachal Mitzrayim according to many of the Rishonim and Achronim. And so you have El Arish is this region. It is a Nachal that goes, it's, again, geographic features that allow us to identify it. And if I zoom in on it, if I just give me the opportunity for a second to zoom in on this.
Is that the tunnel they want to build from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea?
I'm not sure. There you see it. And you can zoom in on it. Oh, okay, yeah. All right.
Give him the shine.
And that's it. We'll stop here. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, that was excellent.